The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, friends, and welcome back to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. It's always a joy for me to get to sit in a studio and talk to people, people who have a story, people whose story is inspiring. And let me tell you, I've got two of those individuals in the studios today. With me is Brittany Pilcher and Hector Devalle. Did I say that right?
You did a really good job.
Oh, my goodness. Nice job. Hope so. These folks are here. They both represent the Center for Independent Living. And it just is great to have you here. I understand that you guys are part of the Christian Chamber, and they know our good friends Mark Goldstein. Mark has been a very important person, not only to me personally, but to this radio station as well. He and his contacts, when I first moved back to Orlando, opened up many, many doors, and the Christian Chamber was used significantly by God, I believe, in our lives. So it's really great for me to be able to be here with you guys and to meet you. I know you've already talked to Brittany, our assistant, and to the program, and she's amazing. And I'm just glad that you guys took us up on the invitation to be here. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, it's great. Let's start with Brittany. Brittany, you tell us about what role you play at the center.
So I am the development director at the Center for Independent Living, and I've been there for 5 years. I've always had a passion for working with nonprofits that specifically focused on disability organizations. Mm-hmm. So I've had experience working with the Muscular Dystrophy Association, Best Buddies, and have been at CIL now for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your past like? What did you grow up a believer or in a family that went to church?
Yes, I feel really blessed that faith in Jesus was always at the forefront of my family. My parents actually met at church in Jacksonville, Florida, at St. David's Episcopal Church. My dad was in the Navy, and he was stationed in Mayport. And one of his Navy buddies said, "Hey, Scott, I've heard there's some pretty girls at this church. Will you come with me?" So my dad grew up Catholic, so that was his first time kind of going to a different type of church. Mm-hmm. And so he fell in love with my mom, and they got married, and then were stationed in Key West, Florida, and that's where I was born. So mm-hmm. I'm a conch. It's if you're born in Key West, that's what you're called, a conch. And we traveled a little when my dad was in the military, but we ended up back in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, so you got to be the military brat for a little while then.
For a little bit. It didn't sink in too much.
Yeah.
So finished grade school and middle school and high school in Jacksonville. And at that time, the Episcopal Church had kind of split. So we went to Charismatic Episcopal Church at Church of the Messiah, and I was heavily involved with our youth group, with any type of performances, our worship team, doing dance worship, and doing mission trips, going to different cities to spread the word. And I've always been raised in the church, and I've made it a part of my family with my husband and my two kids. And so it's just something that I definitely want to instill in them.
Oh, it's a great story. And I understand you guys are now attending, you and your family attending Calvary, right?
Yes. They have been a huge blessing to our family during the time of COVID. They kept their doors open and have really engaged the community and been able to provide worship and wonderful sermons. The pastors over there, the Kringles, have just been pillars in this community, and we're just very thankful to be a part of that church.
Yeah, and we just, you probably passed them in the hallway. I just had the privilege of interviewing both Kevin and Maria, and what a joy that was to get to see them. So I know that you love that couple very much, without a doubt.
Yes, they're wonderful what they're bringing to the church and just the engagement that they're doing with everyone. The church is really lucky to have them.
Mm. That's great. It's great also to hear people in a church speak that way about the pastors. That's really a wonderful, I think, commendation to not only the church itself, but also to you as an individual to really love. And I believe the scripture would tell us to give honor to whom honor is due. And I love that. And I think that's wonderful. Hector, let's turn to you for a moment. What's your background like?
Well, I was born in a small town called Dover, New Jersey. I come from Jersey. And I grew up in a like Brittany, you know, in a Jesus-focused family. I grew up Catholic. I was an altar boy. I was a very bad altar boy because my motives were just wrong in doing that. And I really didn't understand that position at all until I came later on and got baptized in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So born and raised in Dover, New Jersey, grew up Catholic. You know, being Puerto Rican, I guess my parents pretty much made me somewhat of the translator, you know, for a lot of things. And so I was the youngest of four. I have two sisters. One passed away in 2010. And then I have another brother. My brother actually still lives in the house that I was born and raised in. My sister, Yvette, went off and became a nun, a Christian nun. And she's just been stationed all over. She's part of the Sisters of St. Joseph's.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't get to see much of her because she was always off on missions and stuff like that. So what happened to me was that on September 17th of 1982, I was a captain of the gymnastics team. I felt like I was doing really good. I wanted to be a carpenter's apprentice. I was also going to tech school. And I was a senior, and, you know, I never thought that I would make it to being a senior, you know, because I did have that history of drugs and alcohol and trying to experiment with drugs and alcohol at 17 years old. And on a Friday night, September 17th, 1982, I got into my car. I was driving a 1972 Ford Maverick. This was my first car. I had my license for about 6 months. I was a senior for about a week. That same week, they asked me to be the captain of the gymnastics team. So I was living large, like some mm-hmm. kids would say at that age. I was dating a girl that was older than me, but I didn't know nothing about relationships, especially the intimate relationships. You know, I was very lost for a long time. But anyway, when I had the car accident and left me paralyzed, I went through a lot of emotions. You know, like, first of all, of course, why? Why mm-hmm. me? You know, or I took on the blame completely because I was a drunk driver. And still grateful because I didn't end up killing anybody in my accident.
The people that were with you, they survived as well.
The two girls that were in my car survived, mm-hmm. and the two other cars that I hit, those people survived as well. I ended up hitting two cars in a brick wall. Anyway, when I came to a stop, they had to use what's called the jaws of life
mm-hmm.
to get me out of my car. They had to pull me away from the brick wall. They then also had to pull the steering wheel, which was embedded almost in my gut. And so that took a little bit. Anyway, I was taken to Dover General Hospital. I was there for about a month. From there, I was then taken to a Kessler's Rehabilitation in Jersey, in West Orange, New Jersey. Same rehab that, that Christopher Reeve
mm-hmm.
went to. And so I was around a lot of good people. I was around a lot of people that knew paralysis, but I didn't want to know about paralysis. I kept on just telling everybody I was in denial. Pretty much. I was just telling everybody that I would walk again.
And if you can give a description as to like the level of paralysis that you were suffering from.
Sure, definitely. I'm what's considered a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the chest down. I have, it's an incomplete, meaning I have some sensation below the injury, below my chest. I move my arms, but I can't move my hand. I can't move my fingers. So I have no finger dexterity.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I have one control, one wrist, so I can do this. All right, with this wrist, and what this allows me to do, it allows me to pick up papers, it allows me to use my other hand, put them together and stuff like that. So I had to learn all this all over again, how to use my body and what it is that I want to do with my body. So, you know.
And this was as a senior in high school.
Senior in high school, 17 years old, going through this transition that, you know, how do you prepare for that? You know, and where's your faith in all this? You know, so I felt guilty in front of the Lord thinking, you know, this is my fault. I could have hurt other people. I'm hurting my family. It was like hurting other people. So I felt really guilty for a long time and shameful, you know, because I did consider myself to be somebody to have faith, but it was more of a faith. Let me just explain this to you. When I was in fifth grade, you know, being an altar boy, I was also in wrestling. So my first wrestling match, I thought I had it, Mike, because I had God on my side. I'm an altar boy. Come on, man. Of course I'm going to win all my wrestling matches. I got Jesus with me.
Mm-hmm.
I lost like the first match in like about 12 seconds. You know, that's how fast. And so what happened that day is I went home. Matter of fact, I didn't go home. I had to be at church that same day to train other altar boys. And so there I was going to this church to go train these other altar boys. And I was angry with God. I said, how could you? I mean, I do these things for you. I mean, wow, I must have had a lot of nerve, you know, to think that I could talk to God that way. But I felt like he did listen. I knew that there was something throughout my whole life. I always felt like he just was always looking after me, mm-hmm. as a father would, you know, just looking after me. And so there was just times where I just either fell out of my chair. There's just so many. I mean, it's 38 plus years of history here that there's so many things that have happened from the age of 17 to 56 years old where I am today. And also being a part of CIL, it gives it meaning. Mm-hmm. So my faith was very rocky in the very beginning. Although I grew up Catholic, I really wasn't practicing it until, like I said, I became baptized in 2017. I go to Oviedo City Church, which used to be called Northland Oviedo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, and so now they're growing. And I love the fact that it's an inclusive message for everyone, of course. This message is for everyone, whether you're disabled, whether you're not disabled. And for a long time, I just thought that God just, like, you know, ditched me, you know, for all my sins. This is what you get, you know, because I didn't have an understanding of the Bible. I didn't have an understanding of the word until I got baptized and I committed myself. This was like my first time that I made the decision that I want to be with Jesus. My parents weren't making this decision. Nobody else was making this decision but me.
No, that's great.
And now it feels like a really live relationship. It's alive. God is alive. And we can have relationships with him. I joked with you somewhat before, because there's an empty chair right next to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, you know what? I invite Jesus whenever I get nervous or anything like that, especially when I go to the dentist, I invite Jesus to come along with me, man. Seriously.
And how good it is that he does.
Oh, man, I could almost hear whispering. He goes, do you trust me?
Mm-hmm.
Do you trust me? And that's when all the pressure just goes down from the shoulders. The head relaxes and you just let God do his thing.
Now, you're living, Hector, with this sense of paralysis. You said 30-some-odd years.
38 years, yeah.
38 years happened all the way back when you were in high school. Mm-hmm. And I am sure that in this amount of time, you've seen a lot of changes in the way society, the way culture, the way even buildings are built. I mean, I think many people who don't maybe have someone in their life that they know of that has to deal with life as you have to live it, mm-hmm. Really don't appreciate what now we see. Even thinking about, I'm just grateful our studio was big, mm-hmm. and able to accommodate you. And I up until your being in here, I really don't know that I'd thought about that as much as what I now look around and see. But tell us a little bit about what you've gone through.
Sure.
And then in our next segment, we'll be able to talk even more about the center, because
absolutely.
I know they are a strong advocate for people who have to deal on a daily basis with handicaps. So, but tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up back then for you.
Sure. All right. So this was, 1982 when I first, you know, saw that I was going to be in a wheelchair. And so there was no ADA. There was no Americans with Disabilities Act or anything like that. Sidewalks were not accessible. All right. I lived on a hill. All right. And so I got very daring, you know, with my wheelchair. It was a motorized wheelchair. I used to race my brothers down the hill and stuff like that. We used to go into the town and stuff like that. But I was always on the street because there was no way either, you know, and that was the other thing, is either tilt me back, a motorized wheelchair, tilt the motorized wheelchair back, and then have to pick it up, you know, to get it on the sidewalk. So none of that, that's how I was functioning.
So when you say you were on your street, you're talking about being on the literal street level,
absolutely.
Not sidewalk level.
Yeah, not sidewalk level. This was before bike lanes.
And you know? And this again is before the ADA, which really did change a lot and actually had an impact on things like ramps going into sidewalks. And these are things that I think most people just take, and probably you would have too,
sure.
prior to the accident,
mm-hmm.
taken for granted. And I know I do. And I tell you, there are there are many days that I look back now at what I would have thought would have been important for a building to have. Mm-hmm. And that's changed a lot since I've been around some people who have these really needs, like right. as what you do.
Yeah. Now we have been growing. The idea has done so much for people, but we really still have a long way to go mm-hmm. in regards to that. Because like you said, yes, it focuses on accessibility, but it also focuses on the empowerment that people can get from knowing that they can go back to work and knowing that there are, you know, companies out there that will support those individuals that want to go back to work. When I got injured, my school went crazy on trying to, how do we do this? Because like you said, Mike, how do we do this was the question. Mm-hmm. People don't know until it happens to them. You know, when I advocate today for restaurants to become a little bit more accessible, you know, I don't go in there and complain that the place is not accessible. I look at it as an opportunity to get to know the owners, to bring in additional income from them, because people with disabilities still make money and they still spend money, mm-hmm. you know? And I think our economy needs to learn a little bit more about that.
And I think there's a whole lot to be said about people like myself who I would have considered myself just a part of that group that just didn't know and didn't consider as much as I should have. Back in the day, we were part of a building process, and we had ways to do it. We cut some corners on some of those ways to meet these needs that I look back on. And if I had to do it over again, I would not have cut those corners. Mm. And I think that's just the difference, that I think really having a person in your life where you see what they are dealing with, who are wheelchair bound.
Right.
And in your case, like you said, you're in a motorized wheelchair, but mm-hmm. many are not.
Right.
And many can't even negotiate easily, let's say their wheelchair that is mechanical, up a grade, mm-hmm. you know, without having someone behind them to help them up with that. Right. So these are things that just need to be taken into consideration.
Sure. I mean, it's strange because I can be in a mall, you know, the chair goes very fast. You know, and what I love to see are children's expressions. Mm-hmm. They don't see a poor guy in a wheelchair. They see a fast wheelchair.
Yeah, they're thinking, and they want to
know.
Cool.
So what happens, Mike, is I can be whizzing by, you know, and on the corner of my eye, you know what I see? I see a mom pull that kid's arm, like, don't stare. And as soon as I catch that, you know, because they're trying to be respectful or whatever, but what I do is I turn my chair back around. And I go right to the kid, and I let the kid look at the wheels. I let him see the controller. I let him say, it looks like an Atari, isn't it? Or you know, something like that, an Xbox, or something great. Like that. You know, so what I do is I realize that in this chair, I pretty much need to be an educator, you know, to educate people about what are the issues, what are the existing issues, and so forth. So the point I just want to make, you know, in regards to that story that I share, is that you don't have to be afraid. Because, man, prior to me becoming paralyzed, if I saw another wheelchair coming down the road, I'd go out on the other side. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what he had. I didn't know if I can catch it. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't know. Kids, they don't have that. They want to know. Mm-hmm. They want to know how fast the chair goes. They want to know how far it goes from here to China. They want to know mm-hmm. these things.
My guests today are Brittany Pilcher and Hector Devalier. And I'll be back with them in a moment. Don't go away. They're representing today the Center for Independent Living, and we're going to hear a lot more from them when we return. This is The Shepherd Afternoons with Mike. Two wonderful guests in the studio with me today, Brittany Pilcher and Hector Devalier. And Brittany is with the Center for Independent Living. How long have you been there?
Mike, I have been there for over 5 years now.
What is your role, and how is it that you are able to help the people like, I know you serve people like Hector, who have a need for, because of a disability, it could be because of paralysis or other situations. I'm sure there are many types like that you work with. So what is it that you do?
So I'm the development director there, and I have the great opportunity of really educating our community on the work that CIL is doing for individuals with disabilities. So we serve all ages and all types of disabilities. Hector has paralysis, but we serve individuals who are also deaf, who have a visual impairment, have physical disabilities, mental health disabilities. And what's wonderful about CIL is it's really peer-to-peer. Over 51% of our staff and our board members have a disability themselves. So they can speak from that experience and help individuals with advocating for themselves and creating these independent living plans. And that's our mission, really, is to break down barriers that would get in the way of individuals with disabilities living independent lives. Everybody wants to have purpose in life, right? And just because you have a disability doesn't mean that you should not have that purpose. We want to help you find that purpose and help you along the way. Anything that you might struggle with that's going to keep you from achieving your goals, we are there to be by your side. Mm-hmm. And we do it through our programs and our services. One of our programs that we're really known for is our Foundations to Freedom program. And that's where we'll go out and we'll build ramps for homes to make them more accessible. Think about, and you had mentioned before, you know, if you don't have a disability, you don't think about what if you're home alone and you use a wheelchair and there's a fire and you can't get to the phone. How are you going to get out? If you have stairs going up to your house and no ramp to get out, how are you going to get out? And so these ramps are life changing. They are, as some of our consumers say, they're a little piece of heaven. Their way to get out into the world and to be a part of a community and get to a job or get to a grocery store. We do grab bars. Safety in your home is critical. We don't want anybody to fall, to have to go to the hospital, something that could have been avoided. So we install grab bars, ADA toilets. We do door widenings if they now are using a wheelchair and can't get in and out of their door. We can do door widenings. And we do this with the help of our community. So we do it with the help of donors, corporations, corporate sponsors, volunteer groups. They can come out and help us build these ramps for the individuals that we serve. Mm-hmm. And that's over 1,500 people that we're helping a year through not just the ramps, but through all of our programs. We serve 7 counties. So we can serve people in Orange, Osceola, Seminole, Polk, Highland, Hardee's, and DeSoto is the area that we cover.
Now, all of these things that you're talking about are expensive. There is quite a bit of involved in not only the manpower and the labor to build a ramp. My mom and dad had a group that built them one to their house when they both became disabled, and it was so helpful to my dad before he passed away. It was really necessary because he was pretty much wheelchair bound. And then my mother suffers still, although she no longer lives in that same place, but had osteoporosis. So all of these things you're describing, I mean, even a widening of a door, all of that's, there's quite a bit of expense involved. How does the Center for Independent Living fund these things?
There is. I mean, you think about a ramp can cost anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000. And when we're doing about 130 of those a year, it does add up. But we have been very blessed to have the support of companies and corporations and individuals that really see this mission and see the work that their investment and their donation can go and literally change someone's life. So we just really rally and try to educate people and get them involved to help sponsor these ramp builds and these home modifications. Mm-hmm.
That's really a wonderful thing, and you're doing a wonderful service. It's really hard to describe, I'm sure. Hector, jumping back to you for a second, when you realized the struggles that you had early on, and then you find an organization like the CIL, mm-hmm. that's got to mean the world to you.
It's amazing. You get to meet up with your own people, you know, yeah. Because you really do feel like you're alone out there. You know, you don't know where the resources are. You don't know who to talk to. So once you meet anyone from CIL and that provides you such an abundance of information, of resources, how can you not feel connected, you know? And that's part of the thing that the CIL offers to people is just a place to just come and talk about what are your needs, what mm-hmm. you know, what is the situation, you know. That's the way it works. It's a relationship, like Brittany was saying, that we have with the community members, and we ask them, hey, you know, what do you need?
What do you think the greatest needs would be, Hector or Brittany, either one, in our community right now, apart from just awareness? We know that we've already talked about that's probably one of the biggest hurdles that people who might be resistant, or maybe they're not resistant, mm-hmm. maybe they're just not involved, but and the reason they're not involved is because they're not aware of the great need that's there. Yeah. But beyond that, when you get past that, what do you think is the biggest hurdle that you have to work through?
Presently, I'm going to let Brittany talk a little bit about that, and then I can give you some of what I've seen.
Yeah, firsthand experience. So I would say opportunities for individuals with disabilities. Employment can be a big barrier mm-hmm. for the people that we serve, whether it's an attitudinal barrier or just a simple modification. But for employers, and I feel like our community is getting a lot better about this. You see the ads on Amazon with individuals, deaf employees, and Google and things like that. I think it is becoming more aware, but we can do a better job about giving individuals with disabilities opportunities for employment, because like I said, everybody wants to have purpose. Everybody wants to contribute. And we have a program at CIL called Aspire to Hire. And these are people with disabilities. Maybe they have always had a disability, or because of an accident or something that has happened, they now have a newfound disability and they don't know what to do. You know, I can't do my same job. So what kind of jobs can I do? So we work with vocational rehabilitation to help these individuals with pre-employment skills. Let's get your resume. Let's do some on-the-job trainings. Let's work with you on interview skills, on applying for jobs. What kind of jobs do you think you'd be good at? You know, what can you do? And help them navigate the system so they can still keep some of their benefits that they might really depend on, whether it's having aids or medical benefits or prescription benefits, but then they can still be able to work and have that purpose and contribute back to society. I think, and I don't want to speak for people with disabilities, but I work enough with individuals with disabilities, is that you don't want that concept of like they need to be taken care of. No, you know, nobody with a disability wants to feel like they need to be taken care of. They want to give back. They just might do things in a different way. They just might adapt or have a modification, or just need to be asked or just be given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Hector, you had something to jump in with.
Oh man, just that's amazing when she just lays it out.
Yeah,
like that.
It was well done. Yeah, very well said.
Yeah, again, going back, you know, 38 years, I tell people that, you know, despite all the things that were happening in my life, and a lot of good things were happening in my life, got to meet President Reagan, got to meet a bunch of celebrities and stuff like that, because I was, you know, 1982, we were still trying to do some issues about the drugs and alcohol. But in talking about CIL and what they do, you know, the whole general idea of CIL was created to assist those people with disabilities and to give them a purpose. So for me, when I was growing up in Jersey, I moved to New York, and I was in New York, and I got hired by the Westchester Independent Living Center there as the minority outreach coordinator. And I love that job simply because, like I said, I got to go out and really meet other Hispanics with disabilities, other minorities with these disabilities. And I guess it doesn't matter where you come from when you have a disability, we were always a minority, except mm-hmm. this past year, because everybody was sick mm-hmm. this past year. Everybody needed assistance. Everybody needed a vaccine. And we were trying to organize that on such a large scale. CIL does that every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day they take the situation of the person and they're just trying to provide some sort of quality to that situation. And trust me, we all start at the bottom, because I didn't know how to do paralysis. I didn't know how to do a transfer. I didn't know what a shower bench was. I didn't know what mitts were or anything like that. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Today, Mike, I can tell you, after 38 plus years, I'm still learning from CIL. Even as a board member, I'm still learning from CIL. So when you ask, you know, where does the money come from? It comes from those people who either did not know and want to just be able to do more to assist mm-hmm. this population. And that's why I just love the mission of CIL. And that's why I got involved in CIL, because I knew that they were the ones that had the resources. They were the ones that had the information, such as vocational rehab. Vocational rehab paid for both my bachelor's and my master's degree in, you know, in a UCF. I would never have been able to do that on my own, you know, unless I qualified for certain programs that I know a lot of other of my peers are they're not aware of it, especially if you're a newly injured person today.
When you were injured, Hector, what was it like adapting to the new future that you were going to be looking at post high school? And then you mentioned you've gotten your degrees, but much later on.
Absolutely.
But so early on, what did you do?
I lived in a lot of fear, Mike. That's what I did. I lived in a lot of fear because it was so strange for me. You know, I was a gymnast. I was a definitely a person that was into his body, make sure that I look good, you know, and so forth. So when that was all stripped away, literally stripped away, because now I had no control over how it was going to look. And then I had to have somebody else do my personal care, my bowel and bladder care, you know? No way. So I was angry for a long time. And I tell people, I really don't think I woke up to the reality of my disability till about 10 years after.
Is that right?
Because I just lived in a long time of denial. I was just sitting in a chair. I didn't want to talk about why I was sitting in a chair. I didn't want to talk about whether I needed a bathroom or an assistant. I didn't want to talk about it. I was a guy that's 17 years old. I come from a very machismo heritage culture, you know? So when all that stripped away, so when you ask me, what was that like early on? It was fearful, but I didn't tell nobody. I didn't show it on my face because, you know, I really felt like sometimes I had to be there for my parents because my parents were, they didn't know what was happening. They didn't even understand the language, you know, English, to be able for doctors and therapists to really sit down with them and really explain of it. So I had to be an interpreter. We were all learning. My entire family, it affected my entire family. My disability affected my whole entire family. And so I think what was important for me then was support. I needed a support network of some kind. And like I said, it took me almost 10 years to get to that point where I knew where to go, where to look for and what to ask for. But it took me a long time. And I know there's a lot of people who are newly injured. I know there's a lot of families that are now wanting to know more about the CIL. But I would say just start there. Start at your nearest CIL and then start asking your questions there. And in time, the fear will, you know, evaporate and it won't be there as much. I always tell people, I still miss walking. I still get angry because I can't walk, or if something simple like a pen falls on the ground, I can't get it. I still get upset. I just don't stay as upset as long as I used to because I realize it's just a pen that's on the floor. And that's also an opportunity for me to ask somebody for some help.
And, you know, you're an inspiration to many people who are watching and watch you overcome, because I think a lot of time people with a lot less, let's say, severity of a handicap, severity of an injury, or maybe their limitations are much less than what you deal with, yet they see you with the smile on your face that you have, with this go-get-her-done attitude that you have. I mean, from the moment you were here today, I've been impressed with your positivity. And I think that really speaks volumes to people when they see you act that way. You're an inspiration, man.
You know what? It's still evolving. You know, I mean, that's the good news. It really is. And I just love the fact that spirituality, that, you know, a personal relationship with God is just so important. I would not be here without that relationship with God.
Yeah, right.
I would not.
He's got his hand on you.
He's the one that does it, man. Mm-hmm. And I just give glory to that.
Hector DeValue, Brittany Pilcher, my guest today from the Center for Independent Living. What a great organization. We're going to be back with one more segment with them. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. So honored to have Brittany Pilcher and Hector DeValue from, they are representing the Center of Independent Living, Centers for Independent Living. And this has been very educational for me today to get to hear Hector's personal story. It's a touching one, and realize that we all take so much of our lives for granted. Just recently, I had an unusual thing that happened, and I was stricken with a visual problem that I didn't know that was even coming, and it was a tear in my retina. and it was rather scary, and it has left me with a few, well, I'm hoping they're not going to be permanent, but they could be, issues with my eye. And I'm able to still see, I'm able to function, but I'm not able to see the same way that I was before that happened. Mm. And that in itself has been a wake-up call for me to realize how quick in a heartbeat, and that's exactly what happened to you. You get into a car,
right.
You're driving, you never anticipated that that was going to be a car trip that right. changed your life. But that's exactly what happened. And these things that take place like that are often just like that. They're momentary. They are accidents, or there is an onset illness or something like that, that 1 minute you're fine, the next minute you're not.
And that's why I love Kubler-Ross, who teaches the five stages of change. And I think there's now seven stages. But she talks about those five stages of change where you're dealing either with anger or denial or acceptance, you know, and dealing with those feelings, that's what it feels like. So it's never like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you go through them mm-hmm. through those stages. No, sometimes 1 will pop up, or 5 will pop up, or 4 will pop up. You know, either I'm feeling very comfortable today. I love my experience, and that's what I try to truly do, Mike, is my mind is what gets me in trouble a lot of time, because either I'm living in the past or I'm living in the future. But when I choose to live right here in this moment, there is no disability.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, there's just no disability in my mind. But and so practicing living in the moment for me, that works. And I think that's what Jesus' message was, definitely about love, you know. But it was never about what you see is almost the real thing. Mm-hmm. He was talking about so much more than just the body.
Yes, he was.
What did he say? Not, you know, yeah. Knock this body down, I'll raise it up in 3 days. You know? They didn't get it at the time. Because we get to, you know, reflect back on it, we mm-hmm. understand what that means now.
Yeah.
And when you can practice that in your life, your spirituality, instead of trying, you know, I think we should all try to be better human beings. But I think when you really try to really work on that relationship with God, he just steps it up.
You know, sometimes it takes a person to have someone, some bit of a major calamity or an accident before they really do find the extent of what they can do and draw upon the resources. You know, when everything's just going hunky-dory, we don't always dig as deep as what you've had to dig in your own life. But you've dug quite deep, and you've overcome a lot to get to where you are today. You're serving on a board of a major organization. You're an inspiration to those who watch you, I'm sure, to those students with whom you were going to school with at UCF. I'm sure that was quite a picture for them, and maybe caused them to think twice about their own lives. Yeah. And that's really what can happen, isn't it?
Right. And yet the disability is still not the end of that life. It changes it. It definitely changes it,
oh,
but
yeah.
it's not the end. And if anything, for me, it's almost like the Hector that was in that car that was leading into possibly jails, institutions, and death. That accident saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
And people look at me strange when I say that.
Yeah.
I am so grateful to be here. Just so grateful to be here.
The gift of life in itself, it's a real strong gift.
Yeah.
And so many in this day and age, I'm convinced we know that because of what's taken place this past year, it's so sad every day you're hearing suicides and the stories that are there. But I tell you, the gift of life is an amazing gift that God's given us. And you're living that life that God is allowing you to live in a way, Hector, that is an inspiration. And I want to say thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
When you look at, Brittany, when you look at the impact that COVID brought on Orlando in general and Central Florida, we reach all the way up into Lake City and through our station in Gainesville and then Ocala and the Village. There's not a single area in our whole big listening audience that wasn't tremendously impacted by COVID. How did it impact the center?
Yes. So I feel like it made things very relevant, because individuals that we serve, there are a lot of times where they don't have the accommodations needed. Like when we all had to convert to doing Zoom and virtual meetings, well, this was a blessing for individuals with disabilities, because transportation is a huge issue for individuals with disabilities. And so it made it where we could still participate in that virtual setting. But also with staying at home and the lockdown, we got so many calls from our seniors that we serve that have disabilities and others that they were afraid to go to the store, or they didn't have the transportation to go to the store because the accessible transportation was also on lockdown. And so we jumped into action with the help of Orange County, with our other funders. We were delivering CARES kits to a lot of the people that we serve. And what we put in those were just those cleaning items, Lysol wipes, water, toilet paper, masks, things that were...
Yeah, you had that when nobody else did, right?
We did. Things that were out of stock, off the shelves, people flying, you know, to get it, and it was gone. We were able to make these kits and have volunteers work to stuff these kits, and for our case managers to go out to people's homes and to deliver these things. Another huge thing that we were able to do, and I mentioned, you know, transportation is a huge barrier for people with disabilities getting places. We held 2 COVID vaccination events at the Center for Independent Living, where people could come. And if they couldn't arrange transportation or get there, our CIL staff actually scheduled rides on Uber and Lyft and with taxi services to get people to our location to get those vaccines. And, you know, I was out at a FEMA site earlier earlier on, and it was very accessible. They called us out there to make sure that the site was accessible for people that use wheelchairs. And we brought some of our consumers out that were deaf and used American Sign Language. It was a great operation. But as I'm standing out there in the Valencia parking lot on the black asphalt, it is hot. And I am sweating. And I can't imagine our seniors or people that are using wheelchairs or that people that have devices standing for hours waiting to get their shot and to get their much needed vaccination. You know, people with disabilities have lower immune systems sometimes, and it was so critical for them to get these vaccines if they wanted to. And where do you go to get it? And CIL was able to provide that to these people.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward, what are you seeing happen now that some of the COVID precautions are being lifted and they're not being talked about quite the same way anymore? What's on the docket for the future for CIL?
Well, I hope that some of the things that happened during COVID still stay in place as far as the accessibility with virtual meetings. That just really allowed the opportunity for individuals with disabilities to have access and be a part and their voice heard by opening it up with the cities and the counties, really opening up these virtual meetings. It gave our community an opportunity to speak up. And you saw a lot more with interpreters for our deaf community. You know, with all of these, you know, national and federal things coming down, you would see more interpreters, which is much needed for our deaf individuals. But I feel like our community is doing great. You know, they want to get back out there. They'll be safe doing it. And again, just opportunities and accessibility. I just hope the community keeps accessibility at the top of their mind.
For you, how about you, Hector? What's the future looking like for you?
Everything and anything. But I first want to touch on something that Brittany said, that one of the opportunities that we did get with Center for Independent Living was when me and another board member by the name of Dr. Maxine Ruddick, who's an amazing amazing doctor. Anyway, we sat down together. She's more mental health. And we want to do something. We want to make a difference. We want to provide at least something that people can go to look at, you know, like a Zoom chat or whatever. And then just talk a little bit about some of the issues that people with disabilities were having. And we really didn't want to make it a show just for people with disabilities. We wanted to make it a talk show for everyone. So I went to Brittany and I said, Brittany, can you help us out with this? You know, and she provided a great flyer. CIL handled a lot of the questions that people may have. But we started a Zoom chat called Living the Balanced Life. you know, because we wanted to talk about the physical stuff that was going on, why people were being stuck at home. We invited the doctors to come on our show, you know, just to talk a little bit more about the virus and how it affects people and the importance of social distancing. Pretty much what everybody was doing. But so what we try to do is we try to put out there an inclusive talk show that talked about the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual issues that arise when our whole world is under this virus and stuff like that. So that was one of the things. What's in the future? I would love to do more of this. I would love to educate more. I feel like I want to really be able to practice my social work skills in the social media. So I'm doing a lot more public speaking, doing some voiceovers, and stuff like that. But just the excitement of just meeting other people like myself, they're not just sitting home doing nothing. You know, they're either involved in sports, recreational activities. Mike, just 5 years ago, for 30 years, I didn't think that I could fly a drone or do an RC car. Today, I'm really good at those things.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you have a drone.
I have a drone. Yes, I have a DJI drone. It's great. I also have some fast RC cars. But these were things, like I said, 5 years ago, I didn't think I could do. Today, I do Xbox with my roommates, you know, play Xbox because I didn't think I could use a control. Until Microsoft came out with a control specifically for people with disabilities that had limited finger dexterity that couldn't just press those small buttons. So they gave us bigger buttons. They gave us other things. And it was a real simple fix. When I talked to Google, some of those people over there, they said, Hector, man, I wish we would have thought about this 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're only going to get better at it. I can't tell you, when you talk about the future is me sitting here with a voice activation phone, you know? Just what, 5-10 years ago, it was okay. I remember when I had to get trained for voice activation, they brought it in with a program. I forgot what the name of it was, but they brought like these two guys to install the program in the computer and stay with you for 3 days while you practice your voices over and stuff like that. You know,
it really is amazing, isn't it, how quickly technology is changing.
Yeah, so here I am with this iPhone, this iPad Pro, that to chat to my chair. And these are the things that keep me involved in my community. This is how I feel I'm giving back. Mm-hmm. Yes, I need some changes. I need some adaptions done. But man, once you get to see that put together, today I play power chair soccer. You know, I mean, I have fun. I have fun. And sometimes you think that that's the one thing that's missing in people's lives with disability because they're just focusing on the disability. And that's the one thing that I do is I used to do something called Don't Diss My Ability. Utilizing that word disability, meaning don't disrespect me just because you might assume that I can't do it. Give me that opportunity, like CIL does, mm-hmm. to be able to, you know, to be able to go out there and participate.
Mm. Brittany, can you give us the website for CIL?
Sure. It's CILOrlando.org, or you can text the word CIL to 72572. And always give us a call at 407-623-1070.
Brittany Pilcher and Hector Devalier, it's been great having you with me today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
It's been a real learning experience for me. And I pray that from this, that all of our listeners will have grown in the love and the realization of how important it is to open our hearts, open our minds, and think about ways that we can make it better, easier, and more options available for people who are dealing with things that we just don't think about on a daily basis. And that would be a wonderful outcome. Thank you, friends, for being with me today. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.